Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Dan Roberts, co-CEO of Iris Energy. This is a nuts and bolts episode where we talk about the finances of Iris. We also delve into its S21 purchase and its recent movement into AI and HPC.
Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch.
Is your mining operation happening ready? Take control of your own future with the right energy strategy. Linkcoin Energy Trading Platform is a tool used by miners to design, monitor, and seamlessly orchestrate sophisticated energy strategies within electricity markets such as ERCOT, New York, and PJM. Avoid penalties, participate in demand response programs, and capture hundreds of thousands of dollars per megawatt per year by deploying the right block and index strategy. Secure your competitive edge at linkcoin.com.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
Hey, Mining Pod, I'm Lee Bratcher, president of the Texas Blockchain Council. The Texas Blockchain Summit is now the North American Blockchain Summit. The same emphasis on policy, energy, and Bitcoin mining, but now expanded by working with our partners across the country. We've got great sponsors lined up like Riot, Marathon, GDA, CleanSpark, Bitdeer, Lancium, Cormint, Compass, HTS, Crypto Power, Priority Power, Sonoda, and many more. Solidify your next deal or JV, or just come for the networking on November 15th through 17th in Fort Worth, Texas, for the third annual North American Blockchain Summit. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to the Mining Pod. Dan Roberts is joining us once again. Dan, we haven't had you on in close to 2 years now, which is pretty crazy to think about, but welcome back to the show.
Wow, has it been that long?
It has been quite a while. I think we've done two shows with you in the past. I think the last one, it was close to 2 years ago at this point, which just pretty wild. And like I was saying a second ago, I was trying to get your brother on as well, get the dynamic duo on here, but elusive, as you said, so he's not here today, but one day we'll get him.
one day.
So you guys have had a lot of great announcements. September, you guys put out your yearly statements, Australian company, so you can put out your statements at a different time of the year than everybody else. Those numbers came in very strong, especially the hash rate growth was tremendous. Then we followed up with some news about some AI purchases, NVIDIA chips. And then lastly, this last few weeks, we've had the S21 announcement. So we're mostly going to go through those things and really not just stick to the headlines. We want to go through it as a strategy perspective, why you guys are thinking and doing in these certain ways. Let's start off with the yearly numbers from last year. If we can ask you to go back about a month when you guys put out those financials, some really strong numbers came in. And it comes on the back of building out a lot of your guys' sites in Texas, like Childress.
Yeah, look, and to some extent, the market understands our numbers pretty much live time. It's not a complicated business model at the moment. Hash rate equals revenue. Power cost is reasonably predictable month to month, although we can delve into that. Less than corporate overheads, and there's your earnings. So generally, there's not too many surprises in there. It has been a good year, as you suggest. Significant growth in our installed hash rate. The focus has really been on building out the data centers, building this multi-decade infrastructure. We own the land, the infrastructure. We've got 760 megawatts of power available at the moment, which, as we know, depending on the efficiency of the chips, is 20, 25 exahash worth of kind of vacant capacity that we're building into. So to be honest, it's kind of more of the same in that respect. We've spent 5 years now building this business, got a team of 100 globally. They're in a good cadence operationally, construction. It's just continued to roll out these data centers.
And for reference, I have all these miners I have to keep track of. You guys are breaching towards 9.4 exahash. Do you guys have a rough timeline and when you're looking to complete that by?
Yeah, we've said early 2024 in terms of the underlying data center construction. We've either received and are operating or have ordered 7 exahash of computers. So to break that down, it's 5.6 exahash operating. As you mentioned at the top of the show, 1.4 exahash of S21s that we've purchased that will be delivered early in the new year. But there's some capacity there to order more chips as we get closer to those data center commissioning dates.
Awesome. Okay, so I want to turn really quickly to talking about peer miners and how you guys sort of stack up. I had a JP Morgan analyst on the show last week. We're putting up a show shortly, probably put out before this one actually. And they recently gave you guys a newer weighting, upgrading you guys essentially, saying like JP Morgan likes to bid on you, which is probably a nice pat in the back. Tell me a little bit how you guys are thinking about positioning going into halving and going into the next cycle. Typically, we've seen Marathon and Riot sort of just have that weight because I think the branding, and they've been around for so long, and it just sort of had that mind share. But it does seem like there's about 3 to 5 miners that's sort of jostling for that position. What's it going to take for the market to understand that there's like a new class of miners who have popped up and sort of in that same class for this next cycle?
Yeah, look, I can't really comment on the market, buyers, sellers. The stock price will do what it'll do. We're very focused on broadening our investor universe. We're doing a lot of road shows. The analysts you mentioned, we've got some really good relationships there. There's a very large number of them currently on site in Texas, actually. So seeing our facilities firsthand. So we'll continue to educate the market, you know, whether that's retail, institutional, everything in between, and the analysts. In terms of the question around what we're doing going into the halving, we've kind of done it. It was very focused on two things. One was balance sheet strength. So our last reported number was $64 million US dollars in cash and zero debt. In addition, we've been very focused on where we sit in relative terms in the cost curve. You know, it goes back to that old saying, you don't need to outrun the bear in the forest. You've just got to outrun the other person. We think we're very well positioned there. If you look at what we are achieving in our Texas site, largely based off the infrastructure and the software solution that we've developed, where we're driving very low average power prices. In August, it was -$0.08, i.e. we'll pay $0.08 a kilowatt hour to take power, and then we turn that into Bitcoin. So there's an enormous amount of downside protection and flexibility by virtue of what we've built in Texas, which largely allows us to control our own destiny in terms of power price, i.e. we can just throttle our production metrics to achieve a lower power price if the market requires it.
Gotcha. Okay, let's turn over to S21 news. And then I think the latter half of the show, we should definitely talk about the AI and HPC goals you guys have. A few thoughts on that I want to get to. This latest S21 purchase was pretty interesting. You guys put in a larger order. Yourselves and CleanSpark have been the only two public companies that I've seen so far put in orders. And you guys put in most of the cash up front, and then you're going to have a second payment about a year later. And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys have some Bitmain credits in there as well. So there's a few other things to the funding side. Mainly, I'm curious, though, about how you guys are thinking about this purchase. It obviously drives down your efficiency, which is what everyone wants. Your joules per terahash is going lower as you purchase these sort of machines. At the same time, though, there's always that risk by taking on the first batch of any sort of unit. So curious about the structuring of this payment, about the due diligence you guys have done on these machines, and how you guys think it sort of adds to the overall fleet, given that you already have a fairly efficient set of units on the racks.
Yeah, look, just to correct that, the cash isn't up front. I think we paid 20% up front. And then there's various milestone payments, which is typical for Bitmain leading up to the delivery date. So just to clarify that. And then there is a residual payment that's not due until a year after shipping. So the structure of the payments was attractive. And for us, at $14 a terahash, when you look historically at hardware prices, hardware yields, the average paybacks on those chips, for us where we're at, it was a compelling opportunity. And yes, we've been lucky with Bitcoin pop since that time, but we're continuing to monitor the market for additional hardware purchases. So far as the risk on new chips, we're talking Bitmain. They've been doing this for a little while. they're getting pretty good at punching out these chips. They're very good with their aftermarket service. You know, we can go back historically through all the variants of the different models they've had, and some have been fantastic, others have had kind of nuanced challenges along the way. But to suggest they, A, haven't learnt from those challenges along the way, and B, are going to push something out that's materially worse to anything else they've produced, I find that a difficult thesis to buy, to be honest.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've definitely seen a few people commenting about it on Twitter, as we kind of mentioned before the show. How much do you guys like lean into looking into these machines beforehand, or the due diligence process? I'm assuming that there's the R&D team, you guys are looking at this, but for miners who are out there looking at purchasing or sort of growing their own fleets, do you have like an inside look into how you guys think about ordering new units, or even looking at units on secondary markets?
Yeah, so we'll never buy secondary units. Well, I shouldn't use absolute language. We never have, and I'd be pretty reluctant to going forward. Look, we've got a whole R&D team that's continually trying out every new unit, or most of them that are released. So we feel like we've got a very good insight into where the market's at, different manufacturers, different models, etc. The S21 obviously hasn't been released, so it's a pre-order. Look, that we decide the risk, right? At $14 a terahash for what is equivalent to 20% of our current hash rate, let alone where we're going to get to, it felt like a really good risk return investment decision. In terms of trialing them, the way we look at it is essentially it's related to DOAs, so dead on arrivals. So what proportion do you need to send back? Like any manufactured piece of equipment, over a large sample size, you will invariably get a couple that have defects or aren't manufactured perfectly. So the process of swapping them back under warranty for new units, different models have had different DOAs over history. And then really it's their operational capability. So performance at different temperatures, performance under different frequency, different conditions. Generally, it's not overly complex, but you do identify trends where different models will have a different efficiency curve depending on the ambient temperature outside and depending on whether you're plugging those computers into colder climates like British Columbia, Canada, where we have three facilities, or a warmer climate down in Texas, that can influence the allocation of different units to different locations.
Gotcha. Thanks for that. Okay, let's turn towards the newer stuff, the buzzwords, if you will, which is all the HPC and AI stuff. We saw an announcement from BitDigital this morning. They're leaning into it. Hive and HUD 8 have obviously had long stated marketing pushes and physical pushes into getting into this industry. And Iris Energy has now put its hat into the ring recently with purchase of 100 NVIDIA chips. Tell me a little bit about that process. And then I definitely have some follow-up questions about the whole strategy here, mainly because a lot of people are like questionable about this whole strategy. But to the first part, can you kind of walk us through some of the hard details of this purchase order?
Yeah, it's funny. I was we're moving house at the moment, and I was packing up some stuff in my office and found an old seed presentation deck for investors from many years ago. And I should send it around, actually. And we're talking about the digitization of the world, the growth of everything going online, the exponential trends in energy and data consumption, and how Bitcoin mining was the first, but all this high-performance compute. And it's really pertinent today. 3.5 years ago, we actually signed an MOU with Dell Computing to explore this, but parked it based on, you know, opportunity cost of time, capital resources pursuing Bitcoin. So it's been a large driver behind why we have built our platform, why we don't take shortcuts. We build, own, and operate multi-decade infrastructure, everything from overspecking electricals to building proper data centers rather than, you know, sea cans, shipping containers in the middle of the desert. It's to give us that optionality. A, it's paid dividends when you look at our operational efficiency, our operating metrics. We just don't have downtime due to heat to the extent that other players in this sector have, because we've designed these data centers from first principles to keep the computers online. We just don't believe that you should operate a facility where you accept that 10, 20, 30% of the year your temperatures are going to be too hot that they choke the chips and they shut down. We don't think it's good for returns. We don't think it's good for asset life, et cetera. So for us to pivot into GPUs, and if we step back, what we're fundamentally managing in our data centers are ASICs, application-specific integrated circuits. They use the equivalent of about 70 kilowatt rack space. Traditional data centers, historically 5 to 15 kilowatt rack space, so a big variant. GPUs, when we're talking the NVIDIA chips, you know, around 40. So if you compare the two camps that I've just outlined, you've got traditional data centers trying to 3x their power density and how they work through that in terms of their electrical infrastructure, airflow, ventilation, etc. You know, I was in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and one player in the sector is telling me how they essentially have to install a rack in the corner of the room, and then they've got all this spare space left over in the room where they play five-a-side football, essentially, tongue-in-cheek. But that's how they're managing power density. In contrast, we've been managing 70 kilowatts and now looking to manage 40 kilowatts. You know, arguably, we're well over spec for that.
Gotcha. And I remember having a conversation with your VP of operations, or one of your VP of operations this summer, talking about how you guys build your air sites, that you guys don't even allow like a certain percentage of dust to enter the buildings, which I thought was really interesting, because you know, you go to these Bitcoin mining sites in Texas and it's just like they're dirty inside. You mentioned the C-cans, and that's pretty typical, but even like some of the bigger sites, there's always like a pretty large margin for error with dirt and all those sort of things. When you go to a traditional data center, you know, sometimes they're wearing hazmat suits. How did you guys come up with the design for an air-cooled site that didn't allow that sort of contamination to come in the building? And was that because of the future looking towards an HPC AI world, or is that just because of the, again, the first principles thing? Because from a Bitcoin mining perspective, often there is that allowance for margin for dirt and grime, like just because of the desire to ROI your machine so quickly.
Yeah. So there's a few things in there in terms of the design. Like, we made a lot of mistakes. We've been doing this for 4 or 5 years. We've iterated the data center design every single time. People quite enjoy tours of our Canal Flats facility in British Columbia, which was the home of the iteration of the earlier designs. And you look at them, you go, oh my God, why were you doing that? So it has been a journey, but we've got it to a really good point now. And it goes to dust, it goes to heat, it goes to humidity. And it goes back to that point, you know, if you're going to do something, do it properly. And for us, it was, I think there's false economics at play. If you look at the percentage of CapEx on your infrastructure versus your chips, particularly during a bull run, the vast majority of your capital is spent on the chips. But then you want to save 20, 30% on the infrastructure to buy more chips, but in the that ends up being a small fraction of your overall CapEx spend, and then you end up with 10, 20% downtime, let alone the impact on asset life. So I'm not sure the economic argument for cutting corners is there, Will, but each their own. And I think part of it is this sector has evolved. Like, it started off with hobbyists and enthusiasts mining in their parents' basements, right? And now we're on that institutionalization trajectory. I think the fear of Bitcoin disappearing in 2 years is largely gone. You know, this mentality of mine every Bitcoin you can today at the expense of tomorrow, I think it makes sense to have a longer term time horizon, build facilities that are made to last. Yes, as different technology evolves, unplug old technology, plug the new stuff in, whether that's new ASICs, whether that's GPUs, etc. And I think that ROI over time will pay off.
So let's talk about the strategy a little bit for AI and HPC. There's been a lot of grandstanding and talk about marketing. I wrote an article on CoinDesk about this, like an op-ed back in the spring. There's been a lot of Bitcoin miners jumping into this. And the market, I think, liked it in some ways, but in other ways, some people are pretty questionable about it. Want to get your take on it from just like a Bitcoin mining perspective, and maybe just like, less so from a CEO perspective, if I can, just but from a hardcore Bitcoin miner's perspective, when you've seen these things, are you questionable on an operation by operation standpoint about people's ability to pull off this AI venture? And of course, separating yourself and Iris Energy a little bit from this question.
Oh, I think the answer has to be yes, right? Like, you know, if you look across the spectrum of Bitcoin miners, most of them can't operate ASICs effectively. So I'm not sure how you're going to operate GPUs where you've got higher uptime, customer demands, etc. And like, that's not a flippant statement. Like, the evidence is there. You know, look at the Bitcoin mined relative to people's announced installed hash rate. They can't operate it. They can't generate anywhere close to the uptime that you need for GPUs. And that goes back to your comments around why do people, you know, take those shortcuts? Why do they put them in sea cans and shipping containers? And it's just a different mentality. The sector's evolving. So I think the answer to a lot of them has to be no, like they will struggle. But equally, a number will, and they can reinvent themselves. People can innovate. They can upgrade their facilities. They can invest more capital. There are some examples of this happening in the market at the moment. And then you've also got the demand side of the equation. So what do customers actually want? And I think what we're learning is these days of tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 classifications are somewhat antiquated, and we're meeting a lot of existing data center builders and owners as well as end clients. And a lot of them, in terms of what they need for GPU capability, is far lower than what you need in your capital city data centers for mission-critical applications such as hospital systems, government, lifetime shared drives, etc. So naturally, people are starting to work out, and the market's starting to work out, well, what are the fit-for-purpose facilities and what's actually required to run my GPU loads?
Gotcha. Thanks for that explanation. Yeah, myself, I've been like a little, I don't know if the right word, dubious maybe about it. Let's talk about the strategy about it behind the AI move as well. We are 9 months-ish or so from the next halving. And of course, there's going to be sequential ones after that every 4 years. A lot of Bitcoin miners I've spoken with are becoming increasingly concerned about the lack of transaction fees. Bitcoin does look like it's monetizing, going up every few years. But are these transaction fees enough for Bitcoin miners, which is obviously the existential question? Are you guys viewing the AI HPC move as a key to diversifying in the future? Or are you guys also interested in other ways that Bitcoin mining could diversify?
Look, the AI discussion isn't really about the halving, to be honest. We're feeling super confident about the halving, given our position in the cost curve, given our balance sheet position. It's not really a driver. And, you know, just to recap, we've got $64 million US dollars of cash in the bank. We've got a critical mass of operations. We've got the ability to flex that power price at Childress down in the cost curve. And I think this is an element that people don't quite understand fully, which is the level of downside protection you have when you are low down in the cost curve. So again, when we're not paying a hosting provider, we're getting access to the underlying power market. And then because we've developed all this software and algorithms to trade that power market and optimize our power price, we can go very low in the cost curve. The benefit of that is very different to a gold miner. You know, gold miners will survive during periods of low gold mining profitability. But for a Bitcoin miner, you get the added benefit of taking everyone else's Bitcoin. So all those high cost miners that had to switch off because they can't pay their power bill, they just hand us their Bitcoin because our share of the network goes up. So you've got this really unique volume hedge where as the price of Bitcoin goes down, high cost miners drop out and switch off. They basically give their share of the network to us, and we start mining more Bitcoin, lowering our unit cost of production. So we're feeling really good about that. The AI opportunity, it's kind of upside. It's why not? We've built these awesome facilities. They're performing really well. We've got a fantastic team. Why not go and explore the opportunity in the broader market? It's what we set out to do when we started this business, which is to capitalize on that kind of exponential digitization thematic. So let's see where it gets to.
Dovetailing off that for my last question here, curious how you're personally thinking, or Iris Energy in general is thinking about other compute on top of Bitcoin, given the push with drive chains recently, or BitVM recently debuted just a white paper. Do you guys actively look into these things, or you guys have a stance or an interest in looking into Bitcoin governance more?
Look, I think Bitcoin governance is pretty settled. It's not something I concern myself with a lot from a professional perspective, from a personal perspective. obviously there's a lot of interest. But look, the protocol is what it is. It's proven itself for 12, 13 years now. I think it's in a very good place. And maybe go back to your point about transaction fees. I've never quite understood that. I think there's a couple of ways to look at it. One, to assume that there's a future for Bitcoin but no one's using it kind of seems a bit mentally incongruent to me. So you fast forward 10 years, you want to assume Bitcoin's around, which I think people do, and then assume no one's using it and therefore paying to use it doesn't quite make sense. And then when you step back and you actually try to quantify some numbers, let's take the SWIFT settlement network as one kind of parallel global settlement network. If Bitcoin as an open, decentralized network took, you know, a couple of percent, so call it 1% of the global SWIFT settlement volumes, and there was an average transaction fee of 2 to 3 basis points on each transaction, you've replaced the entire block subsidy today. Like, it just seems to be an absolute non-issue. But I get it. Like, Twitter loves talking about these things and, you know, making a dialogue of something that shouldn't be a dialogue. So for us, you know, Bitcoin will survive. By definition, if it survives, people will use it. And fundamentally, more than that, if the miners don't have a reward, there is no Bitcoin. There will always have to be a reward for the miners because it is what secures the network. It's what gives the network value around non-sensible transactions in terms of no middleman, no counterparty, you know, the ability to interact peer-to-peer, and the scarcity. There's only 21 million. So to try and forecast a world for Bitcoin where the miners aren't able to secure the network, it's a bit of a head-scratcher, to be honest.
Yeah, it's definitely an argument on Twitter that doesn't seem to go away. I mean, it also comes up every time we have like a lull in Bitcoin price, so that might say something. Dan, thank you so much for coming on the Mining Pod. It was great hearing from you again. Where can folks find Iris Energy and follow along with what you guys are up to?
Sure. Obviously, the website, LinkedIn, Twitter. We're on the socials. I think it's at Iris Energy Co. On Twitter. I'm on there as well, at DanRoberts0101. Let's make sure we don't leave it 2 years for the next one.
Make sure. We'll do that for sure. Don't you worry. I'll come down to Australia and make sure we get a good show going.
Sounds like a plan.